Well, whether you like it or not, you carry expectations through your life, right? You have some sort of set of expectations that depending on where they come from and how accurate they are, may or may not come true, right? Sometimes you guess right about your expectations and your expectations are met. And there's other times in your life where you're a little bit surprised by your expectations and they're not met. They're actually unexpectations. They're unmet, right? And there's different kinds. You know, there are some expectations, some unexpected responses in our lives that they're surprisingly disappointing, aren't they? This happens every once in a while, right? Where you get an idea and you share an idea with a whole bunch of people. You're like, I got this great idea. And then you just kind of get a lukewarm response. And they're like, yeah, well, whatever, that may work. And you're like, well, that was kind of disappointing. I kind of expected you to be a little bit more excited about my idea. Sometimes you share an opinion that you think's just, hey, I just had an opinion. You're sitting around and you share an opinion like, I think Krispy Kremes aren't any good. And then people get all heated and, you know, you feel like, oh my gosh, that was unexpected, heated response to just an opinion of mine. Have you ever done this before where you just kind of, you're feeling it one day and so you maybe text a friend of yours or a family member a really sweet message? If you have teenagers, this happens all the time, and you're just like, hey, I just appreciate you and I'm proud of you and so grateful for you in your life, and you get just, whoop, you just get the thumbs up emoji back, that's it. And you're like, well, that was a disappointing response. For some of us that got this, and there's a dating version of this, some of you got this back in the day where you mustered up the courage and you said the L word, you said, I love you. And then someone said, thank you. Did you ever get that one? Or I know, you know, if that's you, then just a reminder, we have counselors on staff and we can help you still work through that. I'm sure that's a whole thing for you still. But sometimes responses, you get a surprisingly better response sometimes. And that's always amazing, where you have a whole bunch of stuff you got to return to some store or whatever. And you're like, this is going to be a complete pain. And they're going to make us go through all this rigmarole. And then you go up to return the stuff and they're like, yeah, that's fine. You want it back on your credit card. And you're like, that was unexpected. That was amazing, right? You back out of your driveway one day and you like run over your neighbor's trash can and you're like, oh geez. And then you're like all worried about it. And then they're like, ah, it's all right. We're going to replace it anyway. No big deal. And you're like, that was unexpected, right? Sometimes you're surprised by, if you have little kids at home and bedtime's always a thing and you're like, okay, well, it's time for bedtime. Who's going to go take the hit tonight? And you go and tell your kids, okay, it's time for bedtime. And your kids are like, yeah, you're probably right. I need to go ahead and put myself down. I don't want to get cranky here. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll handle it. You know, don't worry about it. You know, that would be unexpected, right? And there's sometimes unexpected responses that redefine relationships, though. And these are the best ones, that when they're unexpected. It's the kind of thing where you muster up the energy to confess something to somebody. You're like, I just need to tell somebody this. And you tell them some part of your life and you don't know how they're going to respond. And they don't lecture you. You confess something that's a little vulnerable. And that they don't get a lecture back. You just get empathy back. And you're like, that was amazing. And it shifts your whole entirety of your relationship, right? Sometimes there's times where you share a fear and you don't feel bad about it. They just make you feel comfortable in it. You know, have you ever had those times where you did somebody wrong? You goofed, you messed up. You really need to ask for forgiveness and you're keyed up about it. And so, you know, you go and you ask for forgiveness and they just forgive you. They're like, hey, we all mess up and today's was your turn and I'll do it to somebody else. And they forgive you. And so suddenly you see them differently, right? It changes, it shifts the relationship, because of something that was unexpected. Well, we're gonna be in this series for the next couple of weeks called Unexpectations, and we're gonna look at some of the unexpected responses that people gave to Jesus when they came and interacted with Jesus, and they had these unexpected interactions with him, and it was unexpected because he didn't respond the way they thought he would or the way they expected him to. And it shifted the way that they saw him. And today we're gonna start out, and I wanna introduce you to a guy named Simon. Simon was a disciple of Jesus, and so this happens in the time of Jesus, and if you want to read about it, we're going to be bouncing back and forth in the first four books of the New Testament. They're the Gospels, and we're going to bounce around a little bit more about Simon today. He was a disciple of Jesus. He was one of the 12. He was one of the followers of Jesus. He was a really complex man. He had a really interesting story, and his storyline is full of plot twists, and a lot of which he expected, and a lot of which he didn't. There are things that happened in Simon's life that he saw coming, and there's moments that you just read them and they're so well captured in the Gospels that were completely unexpected to those that watched it happen, but also to Simon himself. A little bit more about Simon. Simon was a fisherman. The disciples, if you read the Gospels, you realize that Jesus picked up a lot of people along the way, said, hey, follow me, and he was one of those. He was a fisherman. He had a brother named Andrew. They worked the area up around the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee is this lake that's in northern Israel. It's about 13 miles long, about 8 miles wide. It's in northern Israel. The Jordan River flows out the bottom of it. There's lots of towns and things around the Sea of Galilee, one of which on the very top, 12 o'clock of that, is a town called Capernaum. Capernaum wasn't a huge town. It was probably a third of the size of Toco Hills, just so you imagine how big this area was. And so Simon and Andrew hung out of there a lot. And then a couple of towns over, and Andrew bursts through the door and says, hey, we have found the Messiah. And in our language, this means the one that God had promised to us ever since there was the problem of sin in the world. God promised to bring a solution to it. He would bring a savior. And guess what? We have found him. My buddy John came to me and said, we found him. We found this Messiah. Come and see. And so Andrew picks up Simon and they head down to figure out who this guy is. And so they come upon Jesus hanging out with John the Baptist. And they go down there, and John chapter 1 tells us this. This is what Simon said, a first interaction with Jesus was right here. They show up, and Jesus looks Simon in the eye, just catches his eye, looks him in the eye, says, you are Simon, son of John, which is kind of weird. It's a little bit like you being in Target, you just turn the corner, and somebody's like, you are so-and-so, and they get it right. And you're like, okay, I didn't know how that happened. You're Simon, son of John, but you will now be called Cephas. This is like you turning the corner of somebody getting your name. You're like, guess what? Your name is now Gloria, which would be really weird, especially if you're a guy, right? And so, you know, you turn the corner, somebody changes your name. You will now be called Cephas, which when translated is Peter. So Cephas in English is Cephas in Aramaic, which is the language that they probably wrote this down in, which was translated to Greek, which is Petros, which if you know your Greek, Petros means rock. So this is weird because now Jesus has basically looked at him and said, hey, I know your name, I'm changing your name, and I'm also giving your name a meaning, which means rock, which will have a greater significance for Peter's life down the road. So Simon, who is now Peter, has a new name, which I'm like, Peter has watched this whole experience, and I'm sure he's like, okay, what? And it really doesn't say he had a radical conversion. It says sometime later, we don't know how much later, fast forward to one morning, he and his brother Andrew were wrapping up after a night of fishing, because that's usually when fishing took place. They were up in Capernaum, wrapping up a night of fishing, and Jesus strolls up again. And he looks at him after a night of not very successful fishing, and he says, hey, one more time, I know you cleaned your nets and all that, throw those nets over the side of your boat. And they're like, seriously? And he's like, no, seriously, just do it. So they throw their net over the boat. They have this miraculous catch of fish. I'm paraphrasing all this. Miraculous catch of fish. And this is when it clicks for Peter. Peter's suddenly amazed. Simon Peter actually is so amazed by this, it affects him internally. And he says these words right here. He says, go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. Something clicks inside of Peter that Peter says, you are truly God and I'm not truly worthy to be around you. This is how much it affects Peter. And so Simon Peter is suddenly very much in touch with the divinity of Jesus, but also too in his humanity. He's very much in touch with his own humanity. Very humbling experience for him. So he feels disqualified. And then again, unexpectedly, Jesus unexpectedly qualifies him for something. And he says this, after Peter says, no, he says this. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you're gonna fish for people. Which I kind of feel like Peter's like, okay, what? I don't know really what that means, but I'm all in. And he felt like this was odd, but that from this point on, Peter is all in. There is no halfway followership from Peter. Jesus' invitation intersects with Peter's wiring, and it just goes through the roof. Peter drops his nets, and he follows. He is front row for everything. He's there for all the teaching. He's there for all the miracles. He sees waters turned to wine. He sees lepers made clean. He sees storms that are stilled, right? Actually, Peter's own mother-in-law, he watches Jesus heal his own mother-in-law, which I'm sure the other disciples were like, hey, can you work on my mother-in-law? You know this, they all lined up, right? But they saw all these amazing things happen, and this shift starts to happen in Peter. Suddenly, from his reluctance to even be in the presence of Jesus, he's slowly replaced with this passion and this confidence to follow Jesus well. And Peter arguably rises among the 12 to be disciple number one on Team Jesus. This is where Peter finds his new location, and he becomes the one that's the first to act and the first one to speak all through the Gospels. He's the one with all the right answers. He's the one when Jesus asks questions, who do you think I am? He's like, I got it. You're the Messiah. I got it right here first. Got it. He's the first one that's like, I'll die before I deny you, which is an interesting story later on in Peter's life. Picture boldness. He is the picture of boldness among the disciples. This is who Peter becomes. And he's seen, I think, among the other disciples as kind of the image of the perfect disciple. He's the image of the perfect leader. And with this backstory, so the humble beginnings of Peter that moved to now this prime and amazing student of Jesus, I want to introduce you to this pivotal moment in Jesus's life because I think it tells us something. It tells us something about Peter, but it also tells us about this unexpected way of Jesus. And so after a long day of teaching, the disciples have been following Jesus around, a long day of teaching, the book of Matthew picks it up and it says this. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. So you guys go get in the boat and go. After Jesus had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Keeps going. Later that night, he, Jesus, was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. So the boat's out on the Sea of Galilee, storm whipped up as it typically does in this region, right? And then it goes on, and it says, shortly before dawn, so all night long this has happened. I just want you to vividly imagine what's the experience of these disciples. Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on a lake, they were terrified. It is a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. So suddenly we're in an episode of Scooby-Doo, right? It's like, ghost out on the water. Here's this whole, they're all freaking out. I just want you to embed yourself in the emotions in what's going on, right? Okay, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. I had to do this because it's just too fun. The Bible's translated a bunch of different ways. I love the King James Version of this because, you know, you imagine this chaotic scene and all the disciples are getting rattled around and all this stuff's going on. And this is how the King James Version says it. And I just can't not do this. Jesus spake unto them saying, be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. Which now we're in like an episode of Downton Abbey. I don't know why they translated it that way. I felt like it was a way more intense than that. But Jesus is like, hey, be of good cheer, everyone. You know, governor, you know. But back in the boat, okay, back to the boat. That was a side. I got us distracted. Sorry. Back in the boat, you have these 11 cowering disciples, right, that are like, oh my gosh, there's a ghost. Somebody's on the water. We have no idea what's going on. We're fearing for our lives anyway. And there's 11 disciples that are absolutely terrified except for one. And you can imagine who that is, right? It's Peter. Except this one that Peter, who steps forward, and of course, this is his moment, right, because he's the perfect disciple. He's the one that's built for moments like this. And so Peter steps forward and he says this. He says, Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. I'm not waiting for you. Tell me to come to you, because this is the way we'll get this worked out, because I deserve to be over there with you. We're gonna make a whole lesson out of this. He's like, I'm your guy, you know, and I'm unstoppable. And just as a side, I don't know if you've ever felt this way before. I hope at some point, if you're a Jesus follower, you get this kind of confidence and you feel this in your walk as well. Have you ever felt kind of unstoppable in your faith? You know, you're in those moments where you're like, God, just, you wake up and you're just feeling it one morning. You're like, God, use me in some great way today. And you realize that you're being watched and you want to kind of be that image for people around you. If you do, that's awesome. We find ourselves some days that way, right? Maybe you got an image to uphold and people kind of see you as a pillar of faith. Maybe your family, you're the person in your family. They're like, well, they're, you know, call them. They're the ones that are the Jesus followers. And they kind of see you as the image of faith. Maybe among your friends, maybe among your coworkers. You realize that people say, oh, he or she is that Jesus follower, right? And that you feel this pressure that, hey, I can't disappoint the people around me because they're counting on me to reflect this image, right? Well, Peter was feeling this. I think Peter was feeling this too. Right? I think Peter was feeling this. And here's how Jesus replied to him, of course. He's like, well, all right, well, come on then, right? Which Peter, I think, I don't know if he was afraid. I feel like he was like, yes, this is, again, my socks are going to go up even more as the perfect disciple. Come, he said. And then Peter got down in the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. Now, Here's where this goes sideways. The humble, insecure Peter of yesteryear showed back up again. And he reminded that the bold Peter, he said, move aside. I'm still in here, by the way. And this is why I think it got chaotic, because doubt again started to whisper. From somewhere latent inside of Peter, doubt began to whisper. And fear began to arrive for Peter, right? And this Matthew goes on and says this, but when he, Peter, saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been there in your faith that maybe you stepped out, did something bold? You know, you're like, okay, the Lord's with me. We can do this kind of thing. But then as you started to do it, whatever it is in your life, kind of the winds of insecurity started to blow a little bit. You started to feel it. You started to feel the waves of fear and doubt and uncertainty begin to crash around you a little bit more. And the image of the perfect follower that the people around you saw began to blow away. Have you ever been there before? And in that moment, you start to feel a little bit exposed. You get a little exposed to who you really are on the inside. And maybe you feel like, gosh, I'm disappointing myself. I should be more faithful to this. Maybe you feel like I'm disappointing other people. Maybe you feel like there's an essence that you're disappointing God. You ever been there? Well, that's where Peter is. The confident facade that Peter had built up for all of the disciples and for Jesus was gone now. There was no more unsinkable disciple anymore. And what was left was the real Peter. The real Peter was there, and the real Peter was really scared. And maybe you've been there. You know, when the image that you've built up in your life, whether it be about faith or just the way your life is pulled together, starts to crack, and the real image of who you are, the real reality of who you are, starts to kind of show through those cracks a little bit. It can easily happen to any of us. And so if you ever feel that way, it happens to all of us. It's so easy to happen to us. But the question for us today is, why does that happen? Why do we build those? Part of the reason is that we feel this way because we're people that are capable of great faith, right? And we love to reject that, as we should. When we have faith, we're like, I feel it today. But we're also always capable of great failure and great fear as well, which we don't love to project that. And so our tendency is to cultivate masks or facades that do one of two things. They either project an image of perfection, which isn't true all the time for us, or they keep a distance from people. And we pull up a mask and it keeps people at a distance, and which keeps us inaccessible and unknown, so people can't see the imperfect sides of who we are. And why do we do this? I mean, I knocked out a couple of these. Why do we hide so many times? One of those is comparison. And this is not hard to imagine, because you see the highlight reel of everybody else in the world and you're very much attuned to your blooper reel. You intimately know your blooper reel and you're watching everybody else's highlight reel. So why, you're always gonna lose in comparison, right? And so what do we do? In response to that, we tend to fake it. We create our own highlight reel, right? There's a church version of this as well. You know, we tend to be people that find ourselves, especially in church world. Maybe you grew up in this kind of church, or you feel this when you walk into church. You're like, okay, you can be real to a certain point, but everything's good in our family. Maybe you had a meeting in the car before you got here. Like, okay, we had a bad week, but everything's good. Tell everybody everything's good, right? Did you ever have that kind of church? Church is the last place you become real. Some of us grew up there. And sometimes it's the fear of rejection. That's the reason that we hide a lot of times, because we find ourselves, if people really knew me, they would ask me to leave. The friend group or the small group or the church or the family, if they knew the real me, they'd ask me to leave, or they would leave. And maybe that has something to do with your family of origin. I don't know. Maybe you got that out of your family of origin. Maybe you got it out of your church of origin. Maybe you grew up there. The church you grew up in, you be perfect or be gone was the message that they had for you. It's part of the reason that we hide. So we've perfected pretending to be perfect. Sometimes it comes from the inside out. Sometimes it's simply that it's shame. We just hate the way that feels. We hate looking at the imperfect parts of who we are. So we pretend, or we hide, Or we kid ourselves that we're more pulled together than we actually are. There's a little bit of a side, a little bit of step over this called perfectionism. Perfectionism happens as well. Perfectionism is that side of us that we can't handle being imperfect, which is crazy. You know who you are if this is you, right? We're all imperfect, but we just can't handle the thought that we're imperfect. And we think, if I can't be perfect, I don't want to be known. And so we pretend. And honestly, lastly, I think it's just ease. You know, a lot of times we just hide because it's ease. It's easier to stay fake. It's easier to be distant than to unleash the tangled mess of who I really am. To find people and to create the right words and unleash who I really am, it's just easier to just be inauthentic. Because to say it another way, authenticity takes effort, and it is easier to be fake than it is to be fully known. It seems like a lot of work to put up a facade, but honestly, it takes more effort to be authentic. And authenticity was not a new concept to Peter either. Jesus taught on authenticity all the time, and he raged against inauthenticity. And especially he raged against it in a category of people called the Pharisees. The Pharisees, you were kind of the religious people, the teachers of the law. Facades and costumes and masks were behind all this. And he raged against their inauthenticity. And he called them hypocrites all the time. He called them hypocrites. And the cool thing about the word hypocrite is that actually this word hypocrite, the Greek word is hypocrisis, is the Greek word that we find the word hypocrite that we use today. And if you find the definition of what hypocrisis really means, it's an actor. It comes from the world of theater. This is where this world comes from. If you're a professional actor in the room, then you are a professional hypocrite, because you spend your time acting under a mask and pretending, playing a part that you really aren't. That's what it means to be a hypocrite. And Jesus raged against that all the time. He said, I don't want you to be hypocrites. I want you to be authentic. Jesus continually wanted his followers to avoid the fallacy of becoming hypocritical and to play a part that they weren't. Time and time again, he told them to drop the facade and to be the people that they were, to come as they were, is what Jesus said all the time. And unexpectedly, to most of Jesus's followers, Jesus never condemned any of their weaknesses. He never condemned their weaknesses. He actually encouraged the admission of them. He said, I want you to tell me who you are. Don't be behind a facade. Don't be behind a mask. Bring me who you truly are. Because in Jesus's economy, the problem wasn't so much that we struggle, it's the fact that we hide it. And we mask our doubts and our fears and our goofs and our scars, and we mask it from the people around us. And we tend to try, we think, to mask it from God as well. Jesus talked about this all the time, and because he knew that we tend to march out some sort of curated version of who we are that makes us look a lot more pulled together than we really are. And ultimately, we suffer because of that. We suffer because we put masks up and we put facades up. Because at some point we find, like Peter, we find ourselves sinking into our own reality, and we're surrounded by people that are completely shocked that we have stuff going on in our life because we've hidden behind a mask the whole time. But God knew all along. And we find ourselves exactly where Peter was, face to face with this duality of our lives because we've built up a facade. And Peter felt it. Peter, this rock of faith, was now sinking like one, right? And he cries out, it goes back to the narrative, and I love this passage, and I'd love, if you don't get anything else today, get this. I love this passage because Peter cries out, he starts to sink, he feels the fear, and he starts to sink, and he prays what is known as the shortest prayer in the Bible. Shortest prayer in the Bible. He cries out and he says this, but when he saw the wind and the waves, he was afraid, beginning to sink, and he cried out, Lord, save me. Three words, Lord, save me. None of this like, Lord, Thou which art omnipotent and omnipresent and omni, all the omnis. He just said, save me. No pretense, no nothing. Just, Lord, save me. And I think in this moment, time kind of slowed down for Peter, because he cries out to the Lord and his thoughts were probably racing about how Jesus was going to respond. You know, Jesus going to stand there, standing on the water like Jesus does while he sinks, and just going to stand there with his arms crossed, shake his head, just say, what a shame, Peter. You had so much going for you. You know, he might have thought that. You know, maybe that's how Peter thought that it worked, is that you fail and you're finished. You know, you disappoint Jesus and you're benched. You know, you get ranked. It's like the college football rankings. You're dropped, sorry. You're now number 11. Maybe you thought there was no second chances, and maybe that's how you think it works. You know, maybe that's how you were raised to think that it works. But said differently, Peter's expectations didn't meet the reality. Maybe that was his expectation, but what Jesus did was incredibly unexpected to Peter and I think to the rest of the disciples. Instead of rejection, here's what Jesus did. It says, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him, Peter. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? There was no hesitation. There was no lecture. There was no like, well, let me see if you can sink or swim. This will be a moment to learn moment from Jesus. So only that one question. Why did you doubt? And I think it's really hard to sense the tone in this, because if you want to, you could read this in a really angry way, but I don't think it was written that way. I think the tone of this tells Jesus saying, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt my heart for you when I told you to come to me? Did you doubt that I was gonna be here for you all along? Did you think your failure changed my affection for you? That I was all about it when you were willing to walk and now you start to sink and things have changed? Did you doubt that I wouldn't be here for you? Mostly, did you doubt that I haven't known the real you? Did you doubt that I have known the real you all along? Amid all of your bravado and all your facade, I've known you all along. Did you not know that? Jesus walks him back to the boat together. They take a stroll back to the boat and it says this, and when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down and those who were in the boat worshiped him saying, truly, you are the Son of God. I think Peter got it. I think they all got it, honestly. I think they all got it and they realized that truly you are the Son of God. Truly you are the one who rescues us, that doesn't reject us. Truly you are the one that pursues both the fearful version of us and the faithful version of us as well. Truly you are the God that comes for all versions of us. I think they realized that truly you are a God who isn't afraid of our mess, whether we created it or whether we inherited it, that you're not afraid of it. I think they felt truly you are the God that invites us to step out in courage, but also is going to be there to catch us when we fall. Peter would continue to learn these lessons his whole life, this battle that we'd have with the image that he wants to be, but the faith that he wanted to have all through his life, back and forth, and you can read about it in Peter's life. He has a pretty epic episode at the end of his time, right before Jesus is about to be crucified. Peter continues to learn this, but all through that, Jesus would use him in great, great ways for years to come. He would continue to learn, and what Peter would learn is what Jesus invites us into all consider as well. I think Peter's lessons, the lessons that he learned in his episodes with Jesus, is the same lessons that we have to learn for ourselves as well. And that part of that lesson is how to live a life that is less obsessed with performance and less obsessed with posture and a little bit more obsessed with authentic faith. Because it's what Jesus called Peter to and it's what he's calling us to. And how to be fully aware of a God that knows our struggles and knows our messes and is fully ready to pull us up out of them whenever we call on him. How do we see a God that's ready to meet us in all of what we meet, even around the images that we project, and as much as we try to say we're okay, we're okay. And so in light of that message for us today, here's the simple challenge that I have for you this week. I don't have a whole lot of takeaways. I have literally one challenge for you this week. It's one step, and it's a simple step. But I think depending on where you've come from, it could be a really challenging one, and here it is. And that is to bring the unedited version of yourself to God. And I don't want you to do this conceptually. I would love for you to do this in reality. And I think that the pre-work to get to this point means that you have to start searching out the areas of your life that you felt like you've kept roped off from God. You have the church version of you, maybe you have the small group version of you, you have the Jesus follower, seeker version of you, but there's probably a version of you that you keep roped off from him. Maybe it's a habit, maybe it's a fear, maybe it's a mode of thinking. There's something that you've kept roped off from him. And my challenge for you is that you spend some time this week and pray and simply do this. Tell him what's actually true of you. And walk in the confidence that Jesus is not afraid of that version of you. And part of what he calls us to do is to tell him and to simply pray. And I would like you to anchor this to a specific time. Think right now, what is a specific trigger of a time for you? Maybe it's on your commute. God knows we all need more Jesus on our commute, right? Maybe it's on your commute. And if you commute alone, maybe that's the time you do this. Maybe it's when you get your first cup of coffee. Maybe it's when you get the last person out of the house. Maybe it's when you sit down at your desk for the first time and you take 10 minutes and you're like, I want to pick right now something that triggers me this week to try this. And just say, you know what? I'm putting it all on the table today. And make it real. And make it messy. And maybe for some of you are like, hey, I go to Jesus all the time. Some of you are like, this might be the first time I've ever prayed before. It doesn't matter, wherever you are. But part of that is to be honest and to get specific and to tell him. To be able to say, hey, Jesus, I just want you to know, I'm tired. I'm just tired. I'm discouraged. Life isn't turning out for me the way that I wanted it to turn out. And that's a bummer for me. Billy told me to be honest with you, and that's what I'm just flat out honest with you. Maybe you're sad. Maybe you're afraid. Maybe part of your admission is, you know, I just miss them. They're gone. You took them in too early in my mind, and I miss them. Maybe you're just sick and tired and being sick and tired. Maybe some of this is just admitting that, hey, I don't even know what is wrong, but something's wrong. And maybe it's just, Lord, save me. I'm just going to take a page from Peter's book. Just save me. And the spoiler alert out of this is that God already knows what's going on in your life. He knows what's going on in your heart. If he is truly who he says it is, and we believe what the scriptures tell us about God, he knows what's going on in your heart. He knows what's going on in your mind. So this is more of an exercise for you than it is for him, right? But there's something powerful in overcoming the barrier and punching through the mask that makes us feel like that we're hiding or can't hide from our Heavenly Father. And if you feel a check in your spirit that God will look at you and he's gonna let you down in your trouble, or he's gonna hear what you admit to him and he's gonna balk at it, then borrow the words of Peter, or borrow the words that he said to Peter. Why did you doubt? And I encourage you not to doubt who Jesus has portrayed himself to be and who we stand up here every Sunday and tell you that he is. Don't doubt, just declare it. Say, God, I know you're a God of forgiveness and a God of help, and I'm calling on you today. Maybe start your day with a prayer that says, hey, Jesus, I don't want to impress you today. I've done that for too long. I just want to walk with you really today. And that's it. That's square one. So I'm not asking you to go and confess to your small group or confess to your family anything. You don't have, that's down the road. This is square one. This is about starting at the source. This is about understanding who God is and taking him at his word with what is truly going on in your heart and in your head and in your life. Yeah, 100% authenticity is a goal for our church. We want to be a community where we don't have to have a facade. You don't have to pretend to be anybody other than you are, where no one has to pretend that they're pulled together when they're not. That's the goal for our community. But as for this, all of this starts with a deep understanding of a God who desires to interact with the real version of who you are. And if you didn't grow up in that version, or if you didn't, it wasn't ever told that way, I would love you to start to peel back those layers to find him. Because only in that moment can we find a God that we can say, that we can truly admit that we need. And only then can we find a God that we can truly say, Lord, I need you in my life today, in all of it, in my relationships, in my job, in my work, in my hobbies, in my mind, in my heart, and whatever I go through, all of the junk of my life as well as all the successes of my life. Lord, I ask you into all of it. And our goal is to confidently embrace his promises to us and to be able to sing a true version of who God is. Because in that, I promise you that God has something for you. But it takes dropping the facades and dropping the masks. So we're gonna sing a closing song. And I'd love for you to use some of the words of this song as a prayer for you. Maybe as a goal, or maybe as a finish line in some ways of the removal of your facades in your life. These are the lyrics of this song, and it says this: where sin runs deep, your grace is more. God, I trust you, and I don't doubt that where sin and brokenness is inside of me, whether I created it or inherited, you have enough grace to handle it. You've told me that. Where grace is found is where you are. You are unable to be detached from essence of grace and love and mercy that you are. That's where you are. Where I find you, I find all those things. And where you are, Lord, I am free. Holiness and freedom and health and vulnerability and connection and happiness and joy are found because Christ is in me. That's my prayer for you. It's my prayer for us as we sing it. And my prayer for you this week. Pray that prayer this week. And you might find that the feeling that you get, which will probably be unexplainable to most people around you, might be unexpected for you. That you have a God that gives you peace in unique ways because you understand how deeply he loves you. Let me pray for us and then we'll sing. Heavenly Father, we're grateful for Peter's life. We are so grateful that he went before us and showed us and took so much of this storyline so that we can just draft behind it. Father, help us to be people that are true to who we are, as much as in our world around us, it calls us to foster our masks and our facades. God, we just ask that you can help us to let you in behind those and open up categories of our life that we felt like we've tried to keep from you or pretend that you don't see, so that we might find freedom, so that we might find grace and mercy and the love that you've promised to us and shown to us in the person of Jesus. God, thank you for your desire to put on a body and come into our world and love us. Thank you for the message that comes to us in the sacrifice of Jesus, that we are so loved and you would do anything, including place yourself on a cross so that we could be close to you. Help us to walk through our days with that confidence, to know deeply how much you call us up out of the waves and the wind to find you amid them. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.